Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to writer Lynn Waddell. She's the author of a new book that is as well-written as it is curiously entertaining, Fringe Florida, Travels Among Mudboggers, Furries, UFOologists, Nudists, and Other Lovers of Unconventional Lifestyles. Stick around. There could be an outbreak of bare bottoms anytime. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, brought to you by Amazon.com, Audible.com, and 1-800-DIAL-DJs. Please stop by the website, MrMedia.com, click on our advertisers, support the show. And remember, there's more than 1,000 interviews available at MrMedia.com. We've been doing this since February 2007. Hope you'll find something you like. And thanks for listening. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of Tampa elected officials who once thought they were smarter than a crafty purveyor of flesh named Joe Redner in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Fair warning. There is a lot of talk about butts in Lynn Waddell's new book, Fringe Florida, Travels Among Mudboggers, Furries, UFOologists, Nudists, and Other Lovers of Unconventional Lifestyles. That means a lot of exposed flesh around back, thongs, no thongs, dancing cheeks, cigarette butts, ghetto butt naked biker bash, and even a guy named Butts, adult filmmaker Seymour Butts. Maybe you've seen his SRO classic, Tampa Tushy Fest, Part 1. In Fringe, Florida, Waddell goes beyond the weird, bizarre daily headlines that mark life in Florida and finds a way to make people living here seem even stranger, both in practice and by simple association. After all, if you accept your neighbor and revel your friends in stories of the stripper, furry, carny, swinger, biker, etc. next door, you're essentially an enabler, right? Reading Waddell's book, her first incidentally, and hopefully not her last, one can't avoid being struck by just how good the writing is. While it's easy to enjoy the people and the lifestyles chronicled, it's the prose style that makes Fringe Florida a winner. By the way, if you're in St. Petersburg, Florida this Saturday, October 5th, you're invited to attend the Fringe Florida launch party at Beek's St. Pete, 2451 Central Avenue at 6 p.m. Waddell will also be a guest at the Tampa Bay Times Festival of Reading at the University of South Florida St. Pete campus on Saturday, October 26th, and at the Miami Book Fair at the end of November. And these events are all free to the public. Lynn Waddell, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for that very kind introduction.
Happy to do it. I enjoyed the book, obviously. Now, someone told me that you're only doing interviews, press interviews, with characters who fit into the Fringe Florida motif. Is that true?
Right. In the book, I had to set a really strict criteria because, you know, there's such a broad definition of fringe, and there's so much of it here in Florida. So I had a list of about 20 things, and I chose them because they have some kind of prominence in Florida, as opposed to their cousins in other states. You know, for instance, I mean, you can find, you know, furries in other states, or you can find, obviously, nudists and nudist campgrounds, but, you know, like Florida has, you know, the Grand Central has the largest concentration of nudist communities in the country. So each one of the topics had to have some uniqueness as opposed to other states, you know, some prominence.
Well, and that's a terrific answer, except that wasn't what I asked you.
Okay, sorry.
What I asked you was, I understand that you're only doing interviews with press characters who fit into the Fringe Florida motif. I had actually understood you were only talking to Mr. Media because this was a Fringe program that would only fit in Florida. But it was a good explanation anyway, and I guess before you have a chance to actually answer the question, I'll move on. How is Fringe Florida?
Anyone will, you know, I want to obviously promote the book.
Well, you're doing good. How is Fringe Florida different from, say, the annual Florida centric edition of News of the Weird, Chuck Shepard's syndicated column, where, you know, there's so much Florida weirdness that he actually gives over the column every year to just Florida.
Right. Well, I mean, I think the big difference is I focus on people, not, you know, the breaking news stories. You know, my book isn't, man beats wife with chicken wings or something like that. You know, all of these stories that come out and about weird. And I don't use the term weird because, you know, I'm talking about people. And their lives, and even though some people do some really unusual and even like say strange things in the book, I found that they're often very conventional in other aspects of their lives.
And God forbid you be pejorative in the book.
Right. I didn't want to be judgmental in any way, though. People, you know, and that was one thing that I really had to watch myself, you know, and in my editing, you know, any kind of comment. I didn't want to be snarky or anything like that. And I genuinely liked all the people that I met in the book. And I found them, you know, very pleasant. Like I said, in a lot of other respects, they were very conventional.
Well, I know in my years of reporting for the newspapers and the magazines, anytime, I don't know, maybe it's just me, maybe it's just some of us, when I would go out and profile someone and you spend time with them in their home, or mostly in their home, I think, for this right. type of project, you can't help but identify a bit with, or at least start to understand why they are what they are. And I guess the part of the job is to kind of soak up what makes them them and then be able right. to present it. You can't help but have, I don't know if you have admiration for them every time, but you build a little personal admiration, maybe a little personal.
Right. And I think that was part of it. And what I wanted to share with the readers is I wanted to give them that perspective. You know, I wanted to try to kind of go down those wormholes and at best get a glimpse of things through these people's eyes and why they do the things. And in some cases, you know, it just wasn't really completely possible, you know, because like, especially like in the swinger chapter, you know, I'm not a swinger, and that's not something that you can kind of dabble in. You're either a swinger or you're not a swinger. But I'm not any of these things, you know, myself.
Not even a little bit, maybe, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, I can understand it. I mean, I don't ride a motorcycle, you know. I mean, I loved hanging out with the women from Leather and Lace. And probably that was the one thing I thought, well, you know, if I rode a motorcycle, I might do that because it was a lot of fun. But I'm not really a joiner. You know, I'm kind of too lazy to and non-structured, you know, to have to go to a regular meeting. And, you know, my husband was like, you know, if we became nudists, we'd have to hang out with nudist people. We'd have to go there. We'd have to join a membership. And I'm like, no, I'm too lazy. And you have to remember to carry a towel with you all the time, you know.
That would not have been the part that would have gotten to me, the part about having to remember to take a towel. It would be just the fact of always having to not be wearing any clothes and
right.
around, I don't know. And yeah, you know, you make a good point in the book that the cliche, if there's a cliche, because it's true that people at nudist resorts are not necessarily the most attractive people without their clothes on.
It's true. And the other thing is, and it's really hard to get to understand it unless you actually been in that environment. But you actually feel stranger having clothes on than if you were nude, because everyone else doesn't have clothes on. And then, you know, you feel like, oh, I'm a warrior, or, you know, they think I'm checking them out or something. But clothing, you know, it's a, not having clothing on is a great equalizer, you know. And people always look each other in the eye when they're nude, so.
Yeah, well, that's when they're close up. The rest of the time, they're doing a lot of this. And
right.
This yeah. kind of, you know, looking
yeah.
around. The motorcycle thing, it's interesting. Years ago, I covered down in somewhere in the Florida Keys, that was a Harley Owners Group National Association meeting. It was sponsored by Harley Davidson. Cool. And I went and covered it. And they had, they call it, it's HOG, is the Harley Owners Group. They
right.
call themselves HOG. And it was interesting to me that, you know, when you're on the outside of these people in motorcycle clubs, MCs as you call them in the book, and you see them on the highways, you feel definitely outside of it. But being there covering it and being with them for 3 days and amongst them, I thought, this is pretty cool. You know, if I could get my wife to let me ride a motorcycle, this would be, I could see this.
It,
you get a different perspective on the inside than you have on the outside.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely true. You know, and I mean, I can hardly ride a bicycle. Okay. You know, the last time I rode a bicycle, I cracked my front tooth, you know? So, you know, the idea of me getting on a motorcycle is kind of terrifying. Not just probably to me, but to anyone who might be around. But, I really enjoyed it. And just like in every chapter that I work on, I came in, you know, you can't help but having some preconceived ideas about things. And so I had these ideas about, you know, the biker women. I was like thinking, oh, I'm going to go there. They're going to be throwing beer balls against the wall or something, you know. And that wasn't the case at all. I mean, a lot of them were, you know, had professional jobs, you know, marine scientists and all these kind of things. And so that was interesting. And of course, being a woman too, and they were very strong, obviously strong women and very feminist without calling themselves feminist, you know.
Were there any fringe Florida types that you found difficult to be around or that gave you second thoughts about covering in the book?
Probably the swingers. Just because, you know, I immersed myself in that environment at Swing Fest, and that was a little unnerving, but I won't go into that too much because I'll let people read the book. and there were a couple of people that I left out of the book that I found, well, I can think of one case that I found a little creepy.
Just one case where you found somebody creepy.
Yeah,
good for you, Lynn.
You know, really. I mean, in the guy in the chapter about Joe Redner, the pornographer. You know, I didn't interview him in person because I kind of felt like, well, I'm going. You know, I don't know what I'm stepping into there. But actually, when I interviewed him on the phone, he had a great sense of humor about what he does. You know. And it's a way for him to make money. And I mean, obviously, I think he personally likes it, but he had, you know, like his video series Crack Whore Stories, you know, and then he had, like, he said, oh yeah, you know, I made up t-shirts that says, you know, I saw your mom on Crack Whore Stories. Yeah, I mean,
that's I'll take two. So I want to talk to you about Joe Redner and some of the other characters in particular in a minute, but I had asked, and you were willing to read a little bit from the book, and I wonder if maybe you'd like to do that now.
Okay, sure. I'll tell you what, I'm going to read just a little bit from the beginning of the fetish chapter.
Okay, whenever you're ready.
Which is called The Other Wild Kingdom. Okay, my eyesight isn't as good as it used to be, so bear with me. Wonder Woman is taking a break in the lobby of Tampa's downtown Hyatt Regency. From what isn't clear, but apparently she is invisible to everyone but me. None of the passing casually dressed conventioners give her a second look. Nearby on the escalator, a gray-haired man in red latex coat vestments is trailed by a vixen in a saucy rubber nun's habit. I follow them up to the Kingdom of King. On the convention floor, leashed sex slaves, a nearly nude exhibitionist, weave through the aisles of kinky clothing and sex toys. Young fetish models with breasts like basketballs and names like Blood Bunny, Rubber Doll, Velvet Slave, and Ghetto Butt push website memberships and pose for fan photos. A legless man wearing a t-shirt that reads, Walk on Me, flattens out like roadkill on the carpet to let a fetish model do just that. Is that a man or a hefty woman shrink-wrapped head to toe in latex orphan Annie outfit? And how does he or she breathe? Something that looks like the Ever Ready Bunny is cinched in a black leather body harness and striding up the aisle like a mascot about to break out in a cheer for the fetish team. I had fallen down the rabbit hole and landed at FetishCon, the largest fetish trade show in the eastern United States. Every year, the kinky event takes over the Hyatt for 4 days, drawing more than 2,000 Floridians and visitors from around the globe who dare to act out the strangest of sexual fantasies. I'm a vanilla, as lifestylers call those of us with more conventional sex lives. I'm seeking those whose sexual sessions have a Florida bent and hope to hear later visit them in their element, wherever that may be.
Very nice. Very nice. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
So, two questions. You you write yourself into the book at times, although you're not participating. I guess it's almost impossible to observe a lot of the things you observed without becoming a little bit of the story and having these interactions with people. Did you have to think twice about whether you wanted to be first person that way?
Oh, yes. That was something that I struggled with, I mean, greatly, especially at the, you know, at the beginning, I wasn't going to be in the book. And I talked to somebody who was editing it for me, and then actually who really helped me was I contacted Jeff Klinkenberg, because I know that he's written a lot about Florida, and sometimes he writes himself into it, and I asked his advice. Mm-hmm. And he told me that, he says, you know, you're the guy. We have to know a little bit about you in order to put things in perspective. And then, you know, it was just kind of like a light went off. And I said, okay, yes, you know, I'm going to be in the book. Because, you know, as a traditional journalist, you know, I was brought up in the whole objectivity, you never have yourself in it. And then, you know, there was the difficulty of, I didn't want to be belittling or making fun of anyone in the book, but I'm totally fine with self-deprecating humor, you know. But to do that, you have to be in the book, and so I didn't want the book to be about me because, you know, I don't feel like my life is really that interesting, other than I just go places and, you know, I have a fascination with the unusual. So. That was a little bit difficult, and I still haven't sent the book to my father.
Well, I think you'll do better sending your book to your father than the woman who wrote the novel Tampa. Sending her book to her parents. So I think you'll be okay. Yeah, I think at the intro of this show we exposed all the butts that need to be.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Now what about your husband? Was he because he's mentioned in the book as well. Was he cool with that, or was he like, honey, listen?
Well, he had reservations about it, obviously. And he's a little more he's more reserved than I am. And you know, I've gone to places, you know, I worked on the movie Showgirls, and I interviewed, you know, I went into all the strip clubs in Las Vegas and interviewed the dancers and stuff. So, you know, and as a journalist, you put yourself in a lot of different environments, and he's not a journalist. But at the same time, you know, when it came time for me to go to FetishCon, he was like, I mean, not FetishCon, excuse me, SwingFest. In Miami, he was like, "I'm not gonna let you go there by yourself." And is
sweet.
Bored as he was about going, he was like, "I'm not gonna let you go there by myself. You know, you're gonna be like me in a den of lions or something." And I was like, "Oh no, you know." But actually, after I got there, I was really glad that he was there because they told me that there were only five single women there, that they called them unicorns, obviously because they're highly desirable. So then I was glad to have him there.
Mm. I'm just here it is. I've got a guest on the show actually in a day or two, Daniel Stern, who wrote a book called Swingland. And I've been reading all about unicorns and vanillas and MFMs and FMFs, and it's fascinating.
Yeah.
I have no trouble reading about it. I'm not, you know, I don't think I would have ever. I'm an old guy now, but even when I was younger, I don't think that's something. It's a lifestyle I could have ever felt comfortable in,
right?
Or any of these others, frankly.
Well, I will say something that was kind of funny. My husband said I didn't take him to Mons Venus with me. And he said, yeah, he told his friends, he goes, yeah, my wife's at Mons and I'm home watching a Lifetime movie. And I said, well, you know, but the thing is I generally don't like to have someone with me when I do interviews because it changes the dynamic too much, especially, you know, if I'm interviewing women in a sexual kind of field, because, you know, having a man there, they may not say things that they would normally say. And when you go into an environment that you're uncomfortable in and you have someone there with you, your natural tendency is just to hang out with them and talk to them.
Right.
But when you're by yourself, it forces you to interact with people more.
All right. Well, let's take a minute and talk a little bit about some of the specific individuals in the book, starting with my favorite, who I've interviewed a few times, entirely always by phone, interestingly, as I recall, Joe Redner. And Joe, for folks who don't know, well, you tell people who Joe is and why he's important to us here.
Well, I mean, someone in the book has called him like Tampa's Larry Flint. And I think, you know, there are some good comparisons there, because Joe is a very staunch supporter of the First Amendment. And I mean, and not just because it's self-serving for him, but also I think that he's evolved over the years, and he is, you know, political. He's run for office now. He's ran for office as well as it, maybe about 9 times, I think. And never successfully, but he got pretty close in one of the city council races. But he's very he doesn't hesitate to attack if he's attacked. But if in a normal social setting, he's very gracious and you know, a nice, very nice guy.
Were you at all uncomfortable with him?
No, I wasn't. Like I said, he's very gracious. I had met him several times back when I was working for, you know, alternative paper, and then when I was doing a story for, I guess, the New York Times. At the time the county commission outlawed, banned gay pride in county offices, you know, Joe went to some of the protests, and he actually declared himself gay so that he could file a lawsuit against it. And of course, he's really not gay, but
he's just happy.
He's just happy. And but Joe is so funny in all of the interactions and the conflicts that he's had with the law. And you know, he's been arrested more times than he can actually remember. He introduced fully nude dancing in Tampa, and some people call him the father of the lap dance. But I couldn't really confirm that, because there was a club out in San Francisco that started lap dancing around the same time. But he's the father of the lap dance, I would say, obviously in Tampa.
He's an interesting guy. I've always enjoyed him. I love reading about him. I actually thought about approaching him about a book at one point, and then I just decided, you know, my daughter just hit 17, and for the last 17 years, I've kind of avoided situations like that because, you know, she has to deal with her friends, and I have to deal with her friends' parents. And
right.
I always thought Joe was an interesting story, though, so it was interesting to get to read a little bit more about him. What about Jennifer Chaffin, the founder of the largest women's motorcycle club in the country?
Right. Now, she's great. She's very, like I said, a very strong personality. But when you meet her, she kind of has this, like, kind of hippie, like, vibe to her in terms of she's just really cool, you know. And she doesn't seem to get flustered by very much. But, you know, she's been through quite a bit. I mean, her first husband was assassinated in their home, in their garage, back in, I believe it was 89. And he was a member, he was the chapter boss of the Warlocks, which is a motorcycle club in Florida that considers themselves one percenters. And now she's married to the captain, local chapter boss of the Mongols, which is another motorcycle club. And the 1%er, I should probably explain that a little bit, because a lot of people don't really understand that. The 1%ers, or they took that term because they are considered themselves outlaws. You know, I mean, outlaws in the sense of social conventions. And there was a story years ago about a motorcycle uprising in Hollister, California. And supposedly the American Motorcycle Association said something about, well, 99% of bikers are law-abiding citizens. So they just totally grabbed that with 1%ers, and they wear the 1%er on their vest and things. And they're really serious about that. I mean, they won't allow, if you know, just anyone to wear that. You have to be a member of a 1%er club.
Got it. And what about... now, I listen to Howard Stern a lot, and they've been talking for months about bronies. And while you didn't get into bronies, are you familiar with bronies?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. you don't quite go into that. Bronies, the men who fetishize over My Little Pony, not just they're in love with the ponies, they dream about some of them dream about having sex with ponies, and it's just crazy. Anyway. You do, however, talk to pony groom Tim and pony girl Lindsay. These are the only people in the book, and I apologize to them in advance, that I just felt like I would not have felt comfortable being around. It was just a little too, I don't know. I didn't. My skin crawled a little bit with that. Tell folks what they're into.
They are into something called pony play, and it basically is an extension of BDSM. And, you know, they were both into, like, bondage and everything prior to getting into this. It kind of gravitated towards the pony play. And one person is the dominant, usually the pony master or the pony groom, and the other person is the pony. And, you know, they're the ones under control. You know, there, if anyone has read Anne Rice's, you know, Sleeping Beauty trilogy, it kind of, they probably have some sense of that. But the person that dresses like a pony actually dresses up like a pony. You know, when they wear a bit in their mouth, they, and a headdress that has this big plume of, well, it's actually horse tail hair, usually the ones that, you know, they're expensive, and they're finely crafted like a bridal headdress, and then they wear girthed in leather with a tail on the back, and some of them actually use like a tail with butt plug. You know, and it can get a, it, you know, and it, but they but what was fascinating to me is that they actually like compete. They actually compete like real horses. You know, they have steeplechase, they have barrel racing, they have carts, you know, and then they have like kind of dressage and perform. And so there's a big part of it that's not necessarily sexual. It's kind of just like, you know, a cosplay, just play. And I don't know. I found that interesting. And I was nervous about meeting them at first, going to their house. You know, alone. And in fact, my husband, he actually drove me there because he had family in the area. And so he left me there. And I said, okay, if you don't hear from me in a couple of hours, call me. And I'm standing on the front porch of their house, and it was kind of in this industrial area. And he's starting to pull out, and I'm trying to like do sign language to him like an hour and a half, you know. And of course he didn't get it. And but then, you know, Tim opened the door, and they were very gracious, and they were very nice, and I ended up staying at their house probably for almost 3 hours.
Wow.
And taking them out to dinner afterwards. And like I said, you know, in their pony play world, yes, that's really strange, but then they're also very conventional, like conservative kind of in their politics. He's more libertarian. She is an ordained minister. She plays the organ in her church. They don't drink. They don't smoke. They don't do drugs. And so I found that, you know, you just can't judge people by some maybe strange thing they do.
Well, you can, but as a journalist, you have to be a little circumspect,
right.
And yeah.
Right.
But I there are lines, you know, that every journalist can draw for themselves.
Ah.
Mine would be that I'm not going to interview the Pony Girl and Pony Master. I gotta. You know,
you draw a line somewhere, right?
Yeah. And this is coming.
My best interview, I think, of the whole book. I mean, I ended up having to cut so much, but because they were very self-aware, mm-hmm. and you don't often get people who are that self-aware who can talk about themselves and realize how they look to the outside world. You know.
Well, and that's a perfect way to go into the last one I wanted to ask you about, and that is Angie Fox, whose Foxy Dames Club sells erotic arts and crafts, and which
yeah.
includes the canvases that Angie paints with her breasts, or as you call them, the glands of life. Tell me about Angie.
Right. And Angie is another person that, you know, she's a swinger. She's a lifestyle nudist, you know, because swingers often refer to it as a lifestyle. And so, yeah, she paints with her breast and everything. And that's kind of, you know, it's kind of wacky. But she is also like this incredible marketing person. And you know, she has like, non-sexual, obviously, related business clients. And she also has a club, cigar club, and she, if you met her, you wouldn't necessarily know that she was into these things. In fact, she was a neighbor of some friends of mine in Tampa, and kind of a new area of Tampa, and their son, goes to school with her son, and she was a member of, the Bonco, or I think they play at the clubhouse or something. That's how they met her.
And so being around Angie and seeing her art didn't make you, I figured you were going to tell me that would be the one thing that you came away from saying, you know, I can paint with my breasts. I can do that. I can do that in the comfort of my own home. I don't have to go out and go to Paradise Lakes or any of those places.
You know, I'm not as endowed as she is, but I know that's kind of funny, but she was interesting. She takes a picture of herself after she does it with the painting, you know, with her paint still on her breast, you know, kind of proves the providence of the piece of art, and that's sold with the art piece. So I don't think I could do that.
Oh, okay. All right, just checking. By the way, I before I forget, before we wrap up, I have to say that my favorite line from the book is actually from a photo caption, and for those of you playing along at home, it's on page 101, and it says, "As evidenced by the bunny's bondage wear, sometimes one fetish is not enough." And I think that actually, you may have made reference to that when you read from the book. And there's a great picture of a life-size bunny rabbit dressed in costume and has bondage stuff on over the bunny costume. It's just, I don't know, it's just great.
Yeah.
Great stuff. So I mentioned that this Saturday you've got the event at Beck. Is it Beck's St. Pete? Is that what it's called?
Beaks.
I'm sorry. I thought that was wrong.
It is a Florida-themed bar and grill, so they have like all of this kitschy Florida collectibles that decorate the whole place. So.
And will any of the subjects from the book be at the event?
I know that Joe Redner has said that he is planning to come, and Angie Fox is planning to come. And some of the other people, I don't know. A lot of these people have – it's a long way to travel, so they couldn't come. Pony Groom – Tim and Pony Girl Lindsay were going to come, but now they live in like Live Oak now, so it's they don't have the ability to travel that far and to, you know, the expense.
That's a long time to be on the reins and
right.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
all right. So that is this Saturday, October 5th at 6 PM. Beaks St. Pete is 2451 Central Avenue, and I'll repeat also, you'll be at the Tampa Bay Times Festival of Reading at the University of South Florida, St. Pete, on Saturday, October 26th, and then a month later at the Miami Book Fair. We don't know the exact date of that, so look it up. Also, folks, you can find Fringe Florida travels among mudboggers, furries, UFOologists, nudists, and other lovers of unconventional lifestyles, written by my guest, lovely Lynn Waddell, in great stores everywhere, or you can order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com, MRMedia.com. If you're watching the video, you can just kind of look down over there, past Lynn, and you should see the photo of the book cover. You can just click on it right now, take it to Amazon. You can buy it immediately. You can have it in your home by tomorrow if you want to pay a little extra postage, or 2 days, basically. Lynn, you've got a website. I think it's fringeflorida.com.
Right. I was going to mention that. And, you know, people can keep up with my events, and I post things on there. I'm trying to, you know, blog on there. It's been kind of hard for me to blog lately in terms of I've had so much, you know, going on with promotion. But I do blog some things that didn't make it into the book, or things that or kind of updates, because, you know, things change. I mean, like Mons Venus is now, he's redone the outside of Mons Venus. It doesn't look like the way I described it in the book.
Well, we got to keep up on that.
Right.
If nothing else. All right. And are you on Twitter or Facebook as well?
Yes, I am. It's Lynn Waddell at Fringe Florida, my Twitter. And then my Facebook is, you know, Fringe Florida. Travels among you know, mudboggers, and then I have to, it can't run the whole title on this. It's a long subtitle.
Type in Fringe Florida in your Facebook thing, you'll find it.
Right.
Well, Lynn, I it's funny because we've both been in town writing for a long time, and we haven't actually, I don't think we've actually crossed paths before now, officially. But I really enjoyed the book. It was a lot of fun to read. It's extreme. I can't say this enough. It is extremely well written. If you hear the title and you think, oh yeah, for Florida, everything's weird and bizarre down there, but it's just a really crisply written, entertaining read, and I really encourage people to pick it up. And Lynn, thanks for joining us today on Mr. Media.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me on, and thank you for your nice words. I really appreciate it.
You can see and hear almost 1,000 Mr. Media interviews by visiting our main site, MrMedia.com, MRMedia.com. Or check out the more than 200 video interviews on the Mr. Media radio site on YouTube. And I'd sure appreciate if you'd show some love for Mr. Media's advertisers, including Stitcher. Apple named Stitcher a top 5 news app of 2011. It's a free mobile app for your smartphone or tablet that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. You can listen whenever you want to more than 5,000 shows, get customized recommendations, and discover what your friends are listening to. My own list of Stitcher favorites is pretty eclectic. I start my day with an hour of MSNBC's Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. Then it's the latest two-minute update from the Onion News Network. After that, I'll listen to WTF with Mark Maron, Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin, HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, and excerpts from E's Chelsea Lately and The Soup with Joel McHale. Also in regular rotation on my Stitcher playlist, The BS Report with ESPN's Bill Simmons, the TechCrunch headlines, and the Don Geronimo Show. The latest episodes of each show, whether originating from broadcasts, cable TV, radio syndication, or podcasts, are continuously updated. Stitcher is a free app for your iPhone, iPad, Kindle, Fire, BlackBerry, Droid, and more. And show your support of Mr. Media by getting, did I mention it's free? The app at stitcher.com/Mr. Media. That's stitcher.com/MR Media. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. We're also supported by Audible. Check out Audible's 30-day trial membership and download the audiobook version of the book everyone's been talking about, 50 Shades of Grey by E.L. James. Sign up for your free trial today at audible.com/radio. Again, audibletrial.com/radio. And finally, if you need a disc jockey for a wedding, bar mitzvah, corporate event, or just a big old party, please consider calling 1-800-DIAL-DJS, the party authority for all your party entertainment needs. You can call 1-800-DIAL-DJS or go to their website, 1-800-DIAL-DJS.com, and tell them Mr. Media sent you. and thanks for listening.